I'ma talk to you. You're in an awful mood. What else can I offer you? There's nothing left right now. Give it all to you.
Two 30 to 4 Monday to Friday. It is the Blitz here on AM 1450 KATE. Mitch Widmeyer here with you. We go to the phone lines. He hops on every week. We're always thankful and appreciative for his time. Arif Hassan with us covers the Vikings for Zone Coverage and the Daily Norseman. Find his work through those two outlets, including his podcast. Find a lot of his writing work, zonecoverage.com. Click on the Vikings tab at the top of the page. Thank you, as always, Arif. I know the schedule for the Vikings gets far tougher. They're in Atlanta this week, then they're in Carolina, two teams that are vying for playoff spots, both trying to chase down the Saints in the NFC South. So for the Vikings, the schedule gets tougher. For the Lions, it gets much easier. That win on Thanksgiving, though, to me, should all but wrap up the NFC North for the Vikings, shouldn't it, pending something catastrophic happening?
Yeah, it absolutely should. There's like 5 games left in the schedule. If the Lions win out, I guess, you know, that there's the possibility that the Vikings, if they don't win two of the next five, the Lions could end up taking the division, but it would take a lot because, as it stands, the Vikings are in prime position to hold the division tiebreaker. Obviously, if they lose, you know, the next, you know, 3 games, and then they don't pick one up versus the Packers, the Bears, then maybe the Lions have that tiebreaker because they went out. But it takes an extraordinary set of circumstances because not only would the Vikings have to lose to the Packers and the Bears, which seems really unlikely at this point, which sounds like music to my ears, but also they'd have to lose to one of the Bengals, Falcons, or Panthers. And though the Falcons have gotten a lot better over the past couple of weeks, which makes them an interesting opponent, the Panthers are very unpredictable in terms of their overall quality, and the Bengals don't seem to have it together. So it would be extremely unlikely, although, again, given the history of this franchise, I'm not going to say it's impossible. I will say it's almost impossible.
So I believe the win over Detroit puts two things to rest, Arif. One is what we just mentioned, the race in the NFC North again, pending something unforeseen happening. The second thing is, are you under the impression that even if Case Keenum were to lay an egg at Atlanta or at Carolina, that he would still remain the starting quarterback going forward? Because the last couple of games, it's felt like if he has a dud performance, it could be Teddy time. Now with the way he's played, I think that leash is a lot longer and a lot looser with Case Keenum.
Yeah, I think so. I think that he's built up a little bit of goodwill. I mean, every good quarterback can have a bad game unless you're sort of in that Tom Brady territory. I'm not sure the last time he's had a bad game. But, yeah, every good quarterback's had a bad game. The Saints don't bench Drew Brees, and it's kind of weird to say that when we're talking about Case Keenum, but he's, you know, proven over the last 3 weeks, and I do think the last 3 weeks are different than the rest of the season, that maybe he's earned just a little bit of latitude. The window is closing in terms of the amount of time that you have left to, you know, feasibly play Bridgewater and think about him as an option for the playoffs, because you want a couple of games of latitude for him in order to make that decision. And it wouldn't be fair to Keenum not to take into account the performances he's had over the past 3 games, especially that first half of the Washington game, a little bit of the second half of that Rams game. You know, he's been you know, good enough that I think that you want to give him, like you said, a little bit of a longer leash. Certainly don't bench him during the Atlanta game, barring something completely, you know, Peterman-like.
Keenum was 20. I hope that doesn't happen, anything Peterman-like. Keenum was 21 of 30 against Detroit, 282 yards, 2 passing touchdowns, 1 rushing, no interceptions. Statistics aside, how did you assess Case Keenum's play? What stood out to you when you went back and watched it?
One of the biggest differences between this game and the Rams game, the Washington game, is that, you know, Keenum's had the propensity to do, you know, some really amazing stuff, but he's also had the propensity to just make these catastrophic errors and mistakes. Against Washington, you know, he could have thrown 4 picks given sort of, you know, where those balls were flying in the second half. Against the Rams, you know, there were a couple of stupid mistakes that, you know, also just didn't happen to bear out for the most part. In this Detroit game, it didn't seem like he was, you know, as prone to making those kinds of mistakes, those unforced errors that really make you question about his long-term viability as a quarterback. And though his upside, you know, wasn't as good as some of the best plays that we saw in the previous 2 weeks, we saw that he had the ability to limit those mistakes which I think is kind of the biggest question with him, because we know he can make, you know, those big plays. Over the past 3 weeks, including this Lions game, we saw him make improvements in his ability to create better ball placement for the receivers that generates yards after the catch. Not as strong in this game as in, you know, some other games a little bit earlier in the season, but certainly very strong in this game. And that kind of gives you the confidence that, you know, he's not always going to be, you know, throwing picks. I mean, he had, you know, this four-game streak where he was always throwing a pick. He threw a couple against Washington. And you know, I think Kyle Rudolph saved another one against the Rams. And in this game, it just didn't feel like that was going to be a problem. In a really close game against a divisional opponent where the defense is just not giving you that latitude, it was good that you know, he didn't give the Vikings enough rope to hang themselves.
Always enjoy his time with us. Arif Hasan, our guest this afternoon here on The Blitz. Find his work, zonecoverage.com. Click on the Vikings tab at the top of the page. Also find some of his work through the Daily Norseman. On the flip side, you just brought up the Vikings defense. Struggled at times. They did get to Stafford on a few occasions. They forced a couple of turnovers. I wanted to look at the matchup, Xavier Rhodes and Marvin Jones. Rhodes kind of had an inauspicious afternoon. How do you view it? It seems like it's probably just somewhat of an outlier game. I don't think Xavier Rhodes is falling off a cliff. I know he was on the injury report early on a week ago, but not on Wednesday before the game. Do you think that was just one of those games for Xavier Rhodes?
Yeah, and I think some of it has a little bit to do with stuff that's just, you know, not going to be an issue going forward. For example, the long Marvin Jones touchdown. I mean, you know, he was interfered with by the 12th man, by Terrence Newman. That's just an unusual error. Terrence Newman's a veteran. This team doesn't usually have a problem with those kinds of mental errors and penalties. And, you know, Terrence Newman was that, and he figured I might as well cover this guy. And it really crossed up the coverage. Rhodes ends up giving up 111 yards in the game, but most of that comes on that play. I think there was, you know, one other play where you're like, oof, he's really lost it. And then a couple of other plays where, you know, he doesn't really look like, you know, the guy that we saw earlier in the season or the guy that we saw last year. Certainly, you know, an iffy game. But I think if you take that Marvin Jones play away, and I think that's pretty fair with regards to evaluating him, because I'm not sure that that's his fault, then you can just say it's a little bit of a rough game instead of like a catastrophic game. And yeah, that's going to happen.
Brought up with Matt Stafford that the Vikings got a couple licks in on him. Does he? It kind of just dawned on me during the game on Thursday because of a couple of the hits that he took, Arif. Does he being Matt Stafford, not get enough credit for playing through injuries throughout the years? Like, he was bruised and battered at times last Thursday. I remember it popping up in seasons past, and I looked it up after the game a week ago. The dude hasn't missed a start since 2011, and he's taken some big boy hits. I just feel like the guy would break his leg, and he'd go out there and play and drag the one leg along with him.
Yeah, absolutely. He's maybe one of the most resilient quarterbacks in the NFL. I remember early in his career, you mentioned, hasn't missed a game since 2011. Before then, it seemed like he was injured every single season. And, you know, people were calling him injury prone. And it's not as if he hasn't been taking hits since then. He had to take an x-ray after a game against the Vikings at TCF Bank Stadium when it was pretty cold. I think they hit him 7 times in the first half. Just a brutal game, and then he's able to tough it out. You know, there are games where he's played through, you know, pretty severe shoulder injuries. Yeah, he is a remarkably tough person. And, you know, one of the greatest moments we have in the history of Mic'd Up and in the history of sound effects is this comeback against the Cleveland Browns where he's playing, I think, on, like, a broken shoulder or something where he can't even, you know, move his arms, but he can do, like, out of pain, but he can do just enough to throw the ball, call plays, and avoid the doctors. You know, it's kind of who he is. You know, he's a remarkably resilient player.
Find his work at zonecoverage.com. Click the Vikings link at the top of the page. Arif Hasan with us here on AM 1450. Mike Zimmer is putting an emphasis on the special teams needing to get better. He mentioned it in his post-game press conference immediately following the game against the Lions. He's brought it up again since then. As it pertains to the kicking unit in particular, Kai Forbath missed a 53-yarder against the Lions, had an extra point blocked, which I believe, if we're pointing the blame finger, it was on the snap, not the kick itself. Where's your concern level at, Arif, with the kicking game portion of the special teams?
It's good to say kicking unit, because in that game it really seemed like it was sort of the whole kit and caboodle that was kind of responsible for some of the errors. So You know, we've been concerned a little bit with Kai Forbath's extra points, you know, kind of from the rest of the season. But, you know, his field goal kicking was really rock solid in this game, like you mentioned. There was a really poor snap, and honestly, you know, I think the holder could have done a little bit better, but, you know, primarily it was an issue with the snap that led to the blocked kick. And I don't know that that's going to be a problem going forward. It hasn't been a problem earlier in the year. I don't think that Kai Forbath's misses on extra points earlier were a result of a bad snap and hold. Again, I haven't been looking at it super deeply, but this is kind of the first time both the broadcast unit and Mike Zimmer himself have mentioned the issues with the long snapper and the holder. So I'm kind of led to believe that that was kind of a unique issue in that game. I'm sure some of it has to do with the short week. I'm not really concerned with that going forward. My only concern is, in close games, you kind of want to make those extra points, and that has not been a guarantee for the Vikings.
Looking at the Vikings as a whole, so special teams, offense, defense, everything balled up into one, at this point in the season, what do you feel best and most confident about, and what are you still hoping either gets better and continues to progress or has you a little worried?
I think there's a lot of reasons to think that the offense isn't that sustainable, and it's not just because you know, there's reasons to be suspect of Case Keenum's play given his career. I think the sort of the two backup running backs have been performing brilliantly, but they're just not as good as a lot of starting running backs. And, you know, that includes, you know, the first guy I like a lot, Jerick McKinnon. They don't have to be as good as Dalvin Cook, but given how the offensive line has had some struggles with consistency and run blocking over the past, you know, two or three games, especially that interior, it really feels like, you know, that's going to bite them because they've been making up for it with some explosive runs. And when they can, we saw in sort of the second half of that Lions game, when Pat Shurmur consistently calls runs, they're not able to get it done. And then, of course, you know, I'm a little bit concerned about Case Keenum and you know, how sustainable his play is. I've been concerned about that since the very beginning. I think that the offensive line is allowing a little bit more pressure now than they were earlier in the season. You know, famously, you know, they've been giving up very, very few sacks, but they've been giving up a lot of pressure. And Keenum, to his credit, has been good at preventing those pressures from turning into sacks. But a lot of that has to do with the quarterback, and a lot of that has to do with a little bit of luck. And so some of that's going to come back down, too. So I'm a lot more confident in the defense, despite what we saw last week against the Lions. I'm a lot more confident in that defense getting things together than the offense kind of maintaining an absurdly high level of play. So I think that that's true. I think the special teams unit in general is just not as good this year. Punting is an issue. Kicks are not an enormous issue, despite sort of the extra point problem, but they're also not something that's reliable. And the return game is unusually poor this year. Obviously, without Cordero Patterson, it's not possible to get the same kind of kick return game. But even in punt return, it's just not spectacular. So, I would say the defense is something that I've got sort of the most confidence in going forward.
Let's look ahead. That Vikings defense, old team in Atlanta this week, taking on the Falcons. The NFL is so weird. 3 weeks ago, Atlanta was 4-4. People were burying them. Now they've won three straight, and all of a sudden the Falcons are supposedly back. Are the Falcons for real again in your eyes? What do you make of them?
Well, the thing that characterized the Falcons last year was a good enough defense and a phenomenal offense. And I think over the past couple of weeks we've seen sort of a return to that offense. 27 points against Dallas. That's, you know, whenever Dallas is a bad defense, you know, maybe that's not, you know, meaningful. 34 points against the Seahawks. Wow, that's pretty interesting. Well, they're pretty injured. Maybe that's not meaningful. 34 points against the Buccaneers. That's a lot. They're not a great defense. And at that point, you know, three games in a row where you could have either have made an excuse for them or you can just recognize, hey, maybe Sarkisian's kind of finally figured it out. You know, give the ball to Julio Jones, you know, rotate between Devonta Freeman and Tevin Coleman. They're both really talented. You know, get Matt Ryan into a rhythm without, you know, excessively throwing it short. It's a pretty interesting open question. This is kind of maybe the first time that offense will look like it has been revived against a defense that I think we can guarantee is good, but, you know, has a really good chance of providing them with a real test. It's pretty unclear, but I think that based off of the play calling that we've seen, that maybe they're not completely back. I think that, you know, Kyle Shanahan was kind of not replaceable as an offensive coordinator, but I think they're really close to what they were, and that makes them really dangerous.
Everyone is obviously talking about the Xavier Rhodes-Julio Jones matchup. I was reading some bites from Xavier Rhodes where he said the first time in his career where he was shadowing wide receivers, it was Calvin Johnson. He said that first time where he knew he was going to be shadowing Megatron, he had butterflies and he was nervous, and now it's just part of his job. Everyone's focusing in on Rhodes and Julio Jones. Outside of that obvious one, what matchups are you looking forward most to on Sunday?
I'm really curious to how the linebackers match up against Freeman and Coleman in coverage. You know, I think that one of the reasons that that Atlanta offense was so deadly last year, and one of the reasons that it feels like it'll be deadly this year going forward, is the ability to use those running backs in the receiving game in a way that really just adds something dynamic, something that, you know, a lot of teams look for, but, you know, you don't always find. You know, these are some of the better receiving backs that can also kind of run the ball up the gut. And Eric Kendricks has been struggling a little bit in coverage. Anthony Barr, for the most part, has been really good this year, except maybe the last two games. And that might determine sort of a lot of things. I'm not as concerned about sort of the tight end situation. I think it's Austin Hooper. Not as big a deal. Mohamed Sanu is kind of interesting. I don't think he's going to throw the ball again, despite his perfect passer rating. But, you know, he's a pretty good wide receiver, too. That's just not as big a deal to me. I think that what those running backs can do in the passing game might kind of, aside from Julio, might kind of, you know, turn the game.
How do you see this one unfolding? Who comes out on top if I had you make a pick?
Yeah, I think the Vikings are the better team. I think that, you know, maybe even if their offense is kind of, you know, 90% back, you know, that's really dangerous, and that matches up really well. Their defense showed a lot of promise earlier in the year, but I don't think that they've been following through. A lot of that has to do with some injuries, and, you know, they're mostly healthy, I think, on defense now. But I just don't think that, you know, Deion Jones has been as good this year. Keanu Neal hasn't been as good this year. Robert Alford, you know, who's a physical freak, you know, he's not as good this year. Really the only players that they can kind of rely on are Desmond Trufant, who is just astounding, and Dontari Poe, who, you know, looks like he's recovered well from the injury that he had last year. You know, Vic Beasley and Tack McKinley are both really inconsistent. Grady Jarrett is really astounding, but he just can't be a centerpiece of the defense at this moment, you know, in his career. Maybe next year, and he's only 24. But it's. I think that the offense to defense matchup kind of favors the Vikings, and I think that the Vikings come out on top because of that.
Arif Hasan, our guest this afternoon, we're always appreciative for his time. We'll finish up with our off notes. I would ask you, Arif, who you would take in a straight brawl between Aqib Talib or Michael Crabtree, but I feel the answer would be too obvious. So I'll ask you this. Where does Aqib Talib rank on your list if you were drafting dudes in the NFL to be on your team in a brawl?
Well, I suppose I can no longer pick Steve Smith.
Nope.
Because he's not in the NFL anymore, but he'd be my honorary first pick. yeah, I think Talib kind of ranks up there. You know, obviously, you have to do a pound for pound adjustment a little bit. You know, I don't think Talib wins in a fight against, say, Richie Incognito, but pound for pound, he might. So yeah, in kind of that world, you know, he's definitely a first round pick. You know, he ranks maybe in my top 10, possibly my top 5. But, you know, give me like a Richie Incognito, give me an Everson Griffin, which. It would be nice to know who's training with Jay Glazer right now. That would help a lot, too. give me a mean offensive or defensive lineman for a little bit. I guess I can't take Donald Penn. I mean, I think he's lost two fights already.
Yeah.
But for the most part, you know, give me a mean offensive, defensive lineman. But if I get a pound-for-pound adjustment, you know, Talib might be my number one.
All right, Incognito was a name that's a good one. I did not think of that. The two I wrote down, like, if I see either of these the guys in an alleyway and they're angry, I'm running the other way. Terrell Suggs and Dominican Sue. Like, Sue is going to do anything it takes.
Sure.
Right? Sue's going to do whatever it takes. If he's got a bite, if he's got a claw, he'll do whatever it takes to win that. And then Terrell Suggs just right. Like, there might be a guy who could take Terrell Suggs in a brawl that's in the NFL right now, but I don't know who that guy is.
Yeah, I think, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if Incognito and Suggs fought to a standstill, but I guess. I guess Suggs might be favored a little bit in that fight. That's a good one. Those are both really good picks, better than mine.
I'm going to give you some either-or situations. You give your answer with an explanation. What is more surprising to Arif Hasan? Is it Kansas City starting 5-0 and now losing 5 of 6? Or is it the L.A. Chargers starting 0-4 and now winning 5 of 7?
Oh, definitely Kansas City. And that wasn't that surprising, honestly, but it really felt like they had a lot of the pieces together to sustain a lot of what they were doing offensively. You know, defensively, they've got, you know, the bones of a good unit, but they shouldn't have fallen off this far. For the Chargers, there was a lot of indications that they were this good and were just chargering themselves, which is, you know, a thing that you kind of have to watch out going forward, whether or not they'll shoot themselves in the foot, especially with, you know, special teams, which is kind of the historic bugaboo for them. But they've just been a quality team that just is perpetually in the two-minute situation that they haven't been able to eke it out. But they've got sort of some of the best cornerbacks in the NFL, even though Jason Verrett is injured. Casey Hayward is playing at this outstanding level. The other corner opposite him, I can't remember his name right now, is also playing really well. But, you know, Melvin Ingram has, you know, turned into a really good pass rusher last year. He was kind of showing that this year with the addition of Joey Bosa. You know, they've got some really, really good, you know, structure on defense. Then offensively, you've always got, you know, Phillip Rivers and Keenan Allen is there. No one's really talking about him. They've been playing well. They just hadn't been winning. And so I can see why it suddenly turned into wins. So that's less surprising to me. But, you know, both things, I think, were predictable at some level.
More likely to happen before the end of the year, the Browns win one game or the Patriots lose another game. And just for a reference point for you, the Patriots' remaining schedule, Arif, they have Buffalo twice, the Dolphins, the Jets, and they're in Pittsburgh week 15. For the Browns, they have the Chargers, Ravens, Steelers, Packers, Bears.
Goodness.
Yeah.
That's really good. I'll take the Browns more likely to win one. There's only one game in that Patriots schedule that looks dangerous. That's the Pittsburgh one. Whereas the Browns might be able to pick one off against the Bears. Maybe the Ravens. I have no idea what to make of that Ravens team, but my intuition is that they're bad. Deshaun Kizer's looked a lot better. I mean, they haven't won, so, like, you know, it's relative, but he's looked a lot better. And the defense seems to be gelling a little bit, not obviously a ton. So I'll say more likely that the Browns win one.
We'll leave on this. If you were running the show in San Francisco, would you keep rolling out C.J. Beathard or go with Jimmy Garoppolo? I'm not asking who the better quarterback is or who has the more promising future. I'm referencing that San Francisco offensive line is horrible. They're playing for nothing right now, and there is some sort of risk if you roll out Jimmy Garoppolo, who, I mean, based off what they gave up for him, I think they view him as the future of the franchise. So would you go with Garoppolo the rest of the way or stick with C.J. Beathard, given the circumstances that the 49ers are in?
I'm all for finding out. So I would play Jimmy Garoppolo. I want to know what you have in him. And I understand, like, you know, if you're the 49ers, organizationally, it makes sense to tank. And playing Beathard is maybe your best chance to do that. And so I get that. I'm a huge don't tank on purpose kind of guy, just because, you know, it's sports, right? It's just like a thing that I have. But, yeah, it makes sense strategically to figure out. I mean, he's a free agent. You want to know who he is. I mean, it's not too dissimilar from I think, the Bridgewater situation, except I think Garoppolo only has, like, 100 attempts in his career. It's a totally complete unknown from a different, I think, perspective. And those 100 attempts were an offense where Jacoby Brissett also did really well. And so, you know, who is this dude? Yeah, he was a second-round pick. It's a little bit different. But, you know, who is this dude? I would totally play him for a couple of games at least. If not, you know, the rest of the season, there's five games. You've got some good defenses like Jacksonville. You've got some poor defenses like maybe the Bears. You know, some people say their defense is pretty good. Maybe that's fair. And, you know, some kind of in the middle of the road, Tennessee Titans kind of stuff. So you can kind of get a really good sense of who he is. I would definitely play Jimmy.
Find his work, zonecoverage.com. Click the Vikings tab at the top of the page. Arif, as always, thank you.
Yeah, no problem.
We've got the Jim Mora playoff segment next.